everybody. I am your host, Alexei Card, joined today by my co-host and CSM representative, Jin Tan.
Hello, and good morning.
As well as noted podcaster, or at least frequent podcast guest of many podcasts at Eve. He's also a writer, writes for Crossing Zebras, among other places, and just general awesome Eve dude, Apothny.
Oh, thanks, dude. You kind of built me up. People are going to be disappointed.
That's what she said.
Whoa.
Ooh. For some shout-outs, I want to give a shout-out to Ebola down in Great Wildlands. They're an alliance down there. German alliance gave us a hell of a good fight on Friday, dropping multiple carriers on the Noir. We did like a breakfast club, late night U.S. Rome. And we rolled out there with a couple Megathrons and some Nestors, got cap dropped. It was an awesome fight. Came away with two dead Archons and a Chimera to our name, along with their Sinosac. It was an awesome fight, and major props to those guys for having the cojones to drop the heavy stuff. Jin?
Sorry, well, I blanked that for a second.
Do you have a shout-out?
Oh, shout-outs! I'm so sorry.
We're 5 minutes in, people. And I'm sure Jin will get into it, but he is very, very blitzed right now.
No, I got a shout-out for Logibro and Guard. They did a ton of work to make this summit that we just had a success, so I really appreciate that, and I hope they continue to do good work as the CSM term progresses.
And we'll get into that for sure a bit later. Apothy?
A big shout out to the PL Alliance tournament team. I like had so much fun working with them for the past couple of weeks and months, and I feel like I've learnt just like so much. It's been a really awesome experience. And also the guys that do the Eve Nerds Play D&D show with me, Crass, Grath, Kyle, and Nystrick. That's super, super fun. I think it's probably the most fun I've had in organizing a show on the internet. We're actually doing episode 5, I think it is, tonight after this show.
Oh, that's going to be terrific. I got to ask about that. What's the story behind Eve Nerds Play D&D?
So, like 2 years ago, maybe? Just under 2 years ago, I really got into watching the Acquisitions Incorporated Dungeons & Dragons show, and I thought, that game looks really fun, I want to play that game. So I started doing it, and then I was like, this is really fun, I want to do a show, because some people do D&D shows, and I was like, okay, I'll just do it then. And I asked around a few people, and I got some really cool personalities and charismatic people on board, and we just started playing D&D on Sundays when we're all available, and we dick about and have a good time. It's really chill and informal. We don't force ourselves to any specific schedule other than trying to keep it on roughly Sundays at the same time, and it's just really, really fun.
It's a great thing to listen to. Well, if you're like me and at work and incapable of doing anything, unless you have some like low-level volume in the background, it's so easy to listen to the people who Apothy gets off.
That's awesome. You know, I miss doing pencil paper stuff. It used to be such a fun thing back in the day with my friends, my cousins back in like high school. Sort of fallen off with it a little bit. Kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, Grath's the same way. He hadn't played it for like 2 or 3 decades before he came back on the show, and he like refound his love for this game back when he played first edition, you know, when he was a young man in the 20s.
Man, first edition.
Wow. That is hardcore right there. Before we go any further, I would like to mention our beloved sponsor, EveBet. Eve-bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service where you can bet on real-life sports and esports with ISK. And with the Alliance Tournament coming up, there is no better place to be putting your money. And we're going to talk Alliance Tournament later, believe me. The brackets are out. You guys can bet on the matches. Things are happening. Happening status is its. It's going to be a great tournament this year. Go make some money off it, baby. Put some money on your favorite teams that you think you're going to win. And there's tons of various ways you can play it. You can play it like, hey, this particular match. I think you can, as the tournament progresses, you'll be able to bet on like the overall winner, how much they're going to win by, all that neat stuff. So go down there, check it out. They also, of course, have real-life stuff like NFL, which is happening right now. And they have some casual games as well, like blackjacks and slots. They're adding new stuff to bet on every week, so go check it out, eve-bet.com.
I've already dropped like $4 there on the Alliance tournament, and that's probably only going to get a lot bigger as the first weekend approaches. It's really bad.
Wow.
I put money on CVA and no one else.
You might be out some money.
You know, I gotta rep my boys.
I strongly believe that CVA have a damn good probability of getting top 16.
Top 16, you think?
Well, yep. Our first two matches are relatively easy, I think.
Hence why I'm pretty confident CVA can make top 16.
We do have to get one upset. We have to either beat Vydra, or I've got it pegged as Exodus probably being the third match for us.
Oh, then not.
Yeah, we got it. We have to go through either Exodus or Vydra.
I know, you could storm through the loser's bracket and end up top 16.
No, Exodus is in the loser's bracket.
Oh god.
Yeah, that's gonna be hard.
So that's Exodus gonna, that's losing gonna be to
who? I don't remember, I ran through it a little while ago, but they lost to another, like, top tier team.
So Exodus is up against Ministry of Inappropriate Footwork in the first round, and then the... I guess winner or loser of it'll probably be Hydra, one way or the other.
It's not Hydra, it's Vydra.
Vydra, yeah. Excuse me, Vydra Rololded.
Yeah, Vydra Rololded is our third match, I believe, if we win the previous two. So, let's not get into like high-end AT stuff, but it's going to be fun to watch at the very least. And myself and Apothony will be commentating the first weekend, will we not? Or not commentating. I think I'm doing analysis, but...
I'm playing host, but we'll probably end up doing analysis and commentary and stuff. Like, Nash and Bay just like giving me stuff to do, and I just do it.
Aww.
That's going to be super exciting. I always wanted to commentate the Alliance tournament. It's like one of those to-dos in my EVE career. Some year it's going to happen, boys.
One day.
All right, Apothy, let's have you sort of introduce yourself a bit more to our listeners who may not have heard of you before. Let's start at the very beginning. How did you get into EVE?
So I used to run a couple thousand people strong StarCraft II guild or clan or whatever you want to call it. And a few of the guys there said, hey, we're playing this spaceship game EVE Online. Do you want to come and hang out and chill and mine with us? I was like, yeah, sure. So I did that, quit the game for 2 years because everybody starts by mining and quits the game for 2 years. Then I got back into the game, went, this looks really cool. It sounds really fun. You know, seeing all the big news articles and hearing the people I'd played StarCraft would say, oh, these big fights and stuff. So I was like, cool, I want to do that. But I actually want to learn how the game works because it's so confusing. So I joined EVE Uni, went on my first fleet there, thought, hey, fleets are really fun. I like this. When's the next one? Can I do it later tonight or maybe tomorrow? They're like, oh, don't worry, the next PvP fleet's next week. I was like, okay, next fleet is actually tomorrow. I'm running it. So I became like the main FC in EVE Uni, learning how to do that because I found it really fun. Moved to Waffles because because PL had the reputation and has the reputation for having like a really strong roster of fleet commanders. So I was like, if I want to learn how to be a good fleet commander, this is the place I want to go. So I went to Waffles, went up through Waffles, became the Waffles main FC, became a senior director there. Waited until PL dropped Botlord and having half the universe blue because fuck that. Then graduated to PL, have been doing stuff with PL, and then at some point along the way I got kind of sidetracked into doing a bunch of tournament stuff. So I ended up casting the last two Alliance tournaments from Iceland. I work for EVE NT, casting their stuff, IPR on shows, podcasts. I write for Crossing Zebras. I basically media whore myself out wherever people want me to go. Does that enough? Too much?
That's pretty good. Let's get into a few other things. What is your favorite thing to do in EVE right now?
Currently, Alliance Tournament team design.
Oh, interesting. And what is your favorite ship?
To do well. So, like, historically speaking, the Thorax, at this very moment, without revealing too much, I've been very much enjoying flying the Confessor in Alliance tournament testing for the setups that we actually have considered using the Confessor in. So that's pretty fun.
Nice.
Yep. So I guess you're the person I need to bribe for those sick details so that we can win every match.
Oh, please, I'm nowhere near good enough for PL to actually field me on the day.
And I guess the other thing we would want to know is what is the last best fight you had outside of Alliance tournament practice?
Don't remember, to be honest. I haven't really done that much on Tranquility at all since the Alliance tournament came around. A little bit of soloing here and there. I had a cool fight actually. I was soloing in possibly a Myrmidon, and I came across a group of test swipples, and I started nuking their tackle and stuff. And like, I killed a swipple here and there, I killed an Inti here and there, and then like 50 of them landed, and it was game over. But I kind of like dragged them across like three or four gates, picking off guys here and there, and that was really fun.
Well, that's super fun. I love fights like that. All right, cool. So we had a bit of a poll regarding Sov, who was more right. I really feel like this poll should have been just between myself and Jin, related to the previous episode's disagreement about the Sov system. But we decided to throw Reload in there as well, whose position was basically Sov is pointless. Why does anyone care about it? And he got the most votes.
Wow, I almost that almost doesn't surprise me. I think that says something about both the people who listen and also the state of self currently.
There is some level of apathy going around.
Wow, even me as being apathetic.
I know, right? Next
But I
thing
do
you'll be
take
telling me they're
pride in
shit based
getting,
on Reddit.
even between myself and Jin, I still won. So,
Wow,
by
yeah,
one
I
vote.
suppose. That's all that matters, and
I
that's
didn't.
why people like Soph. It doesn't, I don't care how bad it is, I just want to beat the other person at it.
I just want to have my big name on the board as winner. That's what Soph comes down to for a lot of people. Maybe I
Pretty
should have
much, and they
changed my
kind of
alliance.
designed it that way in a lot of ways.
I should have been a CTA to get everyone in my alliance to vote for that, damn it. Next time I'll get you.
It's missed opportunities, Chen. Missed
True,
opportunities.
true.
I would
Yeah.
really hope that they go forward with some of the talk of like customizing Saab. I think one of the major things missing now is the opportunity to invest and become attached to your Saab system
So
and
that they
create a
actually
place
mean
that really fits
something
your
when
play
all your
style.
so it
Yeah,
means
so they've got
something
all
when
the
all your
structures
Saab goes
coming
away.
out, right, that are going to make your solve all shiny and special and make you tons of money.
Yes.
But even beyond the money thing, like I don't know, eventually having gates come out will be probably pretty great, depending on how that works. But stuff like I don't know, some sort of spatial anomalies or monuments that you can place down or things like that to really make it yours, you know? And I
Would
think
be
in
good.
some ways, almost wormholes are more adaptable to a person's play style. Not like you can change the specific wormhole system, but you could find one that, like, if you really want to fly shield ships and that's your thing, there's a wormhole for that, and you can go find it, and you can find one that's either really weak bonuses, but it's like less valuable, or really strong bonuses, which you're, swimming with some of the biggest sharks in the game. You can make that calculation. I would like something like that for, maybe not the exact same, but something like that for Saab, where you can actually cultivate the land a little bit, feel like this is your place that you own, and you've put so
Yeah.
much time into it, and it really reflects playstyle of your alliance, the economics of your alliance, rather than just like, here's anomalies, here's a structure to make you 10 million, here's a structure to make you 20 million, 30 million, etc. And just here you go, every system's the same.
It would be nice if they could say have those Titan effect generators be placed on structure or used as a structure of some sort, so that you could, have a unique composition to defend your space.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Which is something we'll probably go over in the whole command base changes that we're still going to talk about, I think.
Oh yeah, we're
Yes.
definitely talking about these. Which is a great transition, actually, Jin. So the command boost changes, we discussed them at length on the last podcast, and it just happened to be released the same day the episode got put out, or maybe I think the day after. So we didn't have the details, it was all speculation on the previous episode. Now we actually have the details, and I think we were pretty much on the mark. I think the range was a little shorter than we had assumed. I think we were figuring about 100 kilometers. It's going to wind up being a bit less than that, but still pretty roomy, I think. And the effects, I was not expecting. I was hoping that they would buff them a little bit, but I didn't really expect them to actually do it. But I really feel like they have. I know we're going to be discussing this because there's some talk of is it a slight nerf? But I think with the new effects of, not just armor and shield resistances, but also a hit point buff as well, because they combined the rep duration and rep capacitor reduction into one effect. Likewise, they made some changes to electronic warfare such that they now have a scan resolution buff. That's going to be huge.
Don't forget that they also reduce the amount of links that you can run on a command ship to two.
Yes, they
Rescue
have done
these
that.
rigs.
Yeah, and command processors and have rigs.
I
Which is
like that
very
because
interesting.
coprocs always meant that like armor ships, fine, shield ships got like fucked in the ass.
Yeah, it
Yeah.
really wasn't too
It was
fair.
it did mean that like this is a discussion we actually had with Fozzie when he was talking about this, and I was like, I don't know if it's entirely great to do that because I felt that it was like shield ships already had an advantage when it came to command ships because they could use their low slots for tank through power diagnostic systems. But at the end of the day, I think we're
I
just
mean,
gonna have to see how
power
it works
dynamics
on
help, but
tranquility.
they're not that significant if you look
It's a
at
pretty weak
seven
tank
hours ago.
bonus.
Yeah,
Like,
the thing is,
in comparison to a mid.
yeah, you're right, but it's something I'm wary of, but I think it will probably, on the whole, balance out. We just gotta see, really. There's a lot of changes here, though. We're like, I don't have a solid opinion at this point. I'm just like, we're gonna have to see, unfortunately, because I can see arguments in so many directions with
Yeah, I
regards
mean,
to things
I
being
think the
good or
main
worse.
thing to be most worried about, rather than is this number exactly right, should it be a 37 or a 38% or whatever, is the mechanics of abusing it. For example, we need to make sure that, say, you're in a fleet fight, you don't just have cloaky nullified T3s warp in 50 behind your fleet, decloak, boosh button, everybody gets buffed, and then it warps out and is immediately safe again. Like, dumb stuff like that. Or like, I don't know, in Faction Warfare Space, having your booster sit in a pause, you warp your frigate to the pause with like three boosters in it, all press button, then for 2 minutes you go and win all the Faction Warfare Plex fights, leave, go back, get boosts, come back in again. Dumb stuff like that, which CCP are almost certainly gonna have ways that you can't do that anymore. But if they do exist, then it sucks a giant bag of dicks.
I mean, I think they'll probably be possible, but the duration on these is not long. So I think to in the practice of actually doing it will be far more annoying than the value. I think it's more likely people will just buck up and just throw these links on ships. If anything, we'll probably see entire doctrines of ships that have these. So there's lots of redundancy, like Sleipner's each has one or two command links in the highs, that kind of thing.
Would not be
Yeah,
surprising.
Sleipnir fleets are a thing.
They're
They're
already a
already a
thing.
thing.
Now I just think they're going to be more of a thing.
PL even
Yeah.
used vultures for a while.
I think this effect on gate camping is going to be huge too. The scan res buff is really strong. Like, really, really strong.
It's great for logistics.
It very much is.
It's brilliant for logistics. I think it's brilliant for snipers. I think it's brilliant just for the, you know, the average low sec gate camp. Now I think, you know, having a command ship there instead of people spending mids on remote sensor boosters.
Well, I mean, the
really desirable.
You just have like one logistics orbiting you with like shitloads of remote SIBOs.
People will stop having SIBOs, because what happens if you're in a gate camp with a few friends is you have one person who has more scan res than everyone else, and their arty ship gets to do the thing. So everyone else is like, okay, I need to get an alt with a Blackbird to re-SIBO me so I can get the kill, and then it's just a fight for who in the gate camp has the most scan res, rather like beyond the point where you actually need it to catch the thing.
Well, that kind of already happens on bad gate camps. If you're in a good gate camp, you know, you're putting all of that onto like a Hick or something like that. Maybe like a Hick and
a
Vindi.
Good gate camp. Let's be real here.
Yeah, I've been on good gate camps and I've been on bad gate camps. There's definitely a bit of a difference there. There's some people that just, you know, they're camping the gate, but they're kind of scrubby and they're easy to kill. And then you got people that camp a gate that are actually really difficult to catch and fight. So, I mean, as a gate camp FC, the guy that's FC'd it, I would definitely prefer to have, like, some command ship buffing us up with that, rather than have everyone put their remote Saibus on one person. Obviously, you're still going to need a few, but those mid-slots are super valuable. So to be able to take a mid-slot off of everybody, basically, and use it for anything else, E-War, more tackle, more webs, you know, it's, or just be able to use ships that have fewer mid slots naturally and not feel super disadvantaged about it, I think that's pretty huge. Alright. This is a minor point, and it's kind of old news at this point, but we had psychotic tendencies, hit a bit of a slope. Tissue lost a lot of members, and they also lost a lot of space, leading to the Initiative taking a foothold in Cloud Ring.
It's not the first time Tissue have died. Like, they pretty regularly, Lex joins, builds it up, it dies when Lex leaves, or it dies Sir Lex leaves, Lex goes somewhere else, they do stuff, he does stuff somewhere else for a while, he gets the itch to run Alliance again, adversity comes back.
Yeah.
It's the Circle of Life.
Circle of Lex.
is that what we're going to call CO2 when Adversity joins them? Because they seem to be taking up every other corp that is leaving other alliances.
Well, they kind of need it. They're in a little bit of an awkward place now.
Yeah.
Which is sort of unavoidable given their circumstances, leaving the... you know, just the whole Money Badger Coalition versus Boonswarm War, the way they left the Imperium, sort of awkward. They weren't really the best friends with Money Badgers anyway, and now they're just like owning tribute with Test on one side and all these other alliances around them.
My favorite thing about CO2 is Gigax, because like, you never know what he's going to do next. Like, I don't think even Gigax knows what Gigax is going to do next. And it just makes for great, like, scenarios of what's going on.
I was on Fleet with him once. Definitely a fun alliance to hang around with. And I wish them the best. I actually think they're in an awkward position, but I also think they're in a strong position. It's just they need to make sure that they're always projecting internal strength. So that's probably why they're recruiting very aggressively. There's a lot of people that would love to see them get their asses kicked. I'm not sure they can handle it just fine. They're tough as nails. Now, just, you know, it was at a foothold initially, but it looks like Initiative and Initiative Mercenaries have fully taken over Cloud Ring, which is good for them. I think they're about a one-region alliance, give or take, and it'll be interesting to see what they do next, whether they look toward the north or look toward the south.
This is the part where all the old Imperium alliances take their own region, And then it turns out that all along the entire war was a ruse and they end up owning more space than they ever did before.
Master plan. Master plan. We never saw it coming.
The Soviet strategy, you guys.
World War B was an inside job.
Now the big story that happened while we were on break. And I know everyone here has opinions. Eve is going free to play. That's right, starting in November, you will be able to play Eve Online. Not fully play it in terms of ships and stuff, but unlimited play in terms of time. You'll just be able to have an account with a character and no subscription, go out in ships and PvP and do missions and all that stuff. Wow. I was a little shocked when I saw it, but I don't necessarily think that it's a bad change. I think it's going to upset a lot of the status quo, though, in a couple ways. So let's get into it. Let's talk about CCP's economic model and how this plays into it. Now, CCP is a subscription-based company because EVE Online is their pretty much only moneymaker, and it is, as or at least has always been, subscription-based. They've tried to augment it with like microtransactions for things like ship skins, and they've sort of incorporated Aurum sort of into the subscription model with people able to convert Plex to Aurum, but you could also just buy Aurum directly. So this sort of matches like the League of Legends side of things, where there's regularly new skins added, and you can buy the skins with money, and the actual game is free. Of course, Eve has the subscription model on top of that. So I think in terms of the economic model, the decision is pretty sound.
Yeah, now, I agree there.
Yeah, I think that they'll initially see a hit whereby all the people that play Eve but would rather chill with Alpha Clones will kind of stop paying their sub. And, you know, a bunch of accounts will go out and just go into alpha mode for whatever reason people might have for doing that. But then after a while, with the flood or stream or whatever you want to call it of new people coming in, it gives more exposure to the game. And I think it, not only will it help with more new faces in EVE, I think it will help with retention a lot, because I think far fewer newbies will fall into the trap of, okay, I have 21 days to learn how to make a Plex in 21 days, which I think kills a lot of new players from the game.
Yeah, I think people who say, oh, well, it doesn't matter because you've already got most of this from the free trials aren't really understanding how often that comes up when you're talking to newer players. It's like, all right, well, I can probably only play like afford 1 month of subscription, so I'm going to try and make a Plex in that time. They try it, they maybe do it, but they'll burn out and they will not enjoy the game, and it'll feel like a job to them. So having there be in like a nice state where people can just play the game, and if they have the money or the time, or you know, the money in real life or the money in game, they can just go ahead and Plex. That's going to be a huge
far more
buff
likely
to, like,
that people are going to be in a position to love the game before they pay for it. And I think if you love the game before you've paid any money for it, then you have a really good relationship with that game and you're far more willing to spend all your money on it.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who, changed trial accounts for 2 years before he finally got a job and was able to play this game properly, it's something that younger me would have appreciated quite a lot.
Yeah, I just think the freemium model is, it's tried and true in the games industry at this point. It's tried and true in many industries. Podcasting comes to mind. So many podcasts out there have free content, but some sort of subscription aspect to it, where once you're in love with the broadcast, you can then regularly support it. And you really don't mind it, because at that point, you know, you love what they do and you want to support the show. I think it's going to be very similar for Eve, but you get tons of benefits for the subscription. So there's a lot of in-game incentive for you to want to do that. I don't know. I think if you went the other way around and Eve was free and then you'd have the subscription concept, it'd probably be like a pay-to-win kind of thing, but I don't mind it at all because they went the other way with it. Now it's sort of like free to lose, I guess you could say, You know, if you really just want to run around in destroyers and you don't care about anything else besides that, okay.
That is an amazing way to phrase it. Free to lose.
The only thing that makes me sad about using Alpha Clones, and I'm planning on starting an Alpha Clone only alliance, possibly with Jin, is how crap T1 guns are compared to T2. It makes me so sad. Like, looking at all these fits, I'm like, oh, this fit's so cool. How much DPS does it? Oh.
I no offense, Apothy. I've been forcing my alliance to use T1 gun doctrines to test them out.
That's brutal, dude. Horrible man.
No. I'm using doctrines that are specifically built so they're only fit if you use T1 guns, and they're actually pretty great. We crushed some goon characters with them the other day, and Kendar owed me a drink at UNT for that. Good times.
You had several drinks at UNT, I hear.
Too many drinks. Yeah. The pictures are all over Twitter and on Reddit if you care enough to look, but bear in mind that that was about a day ago, which is why I sound a bit rough today. I don't have a real hangover, I'm just mentally destroyed.
I think the getting back to the economic model thing, one thing that's going to be a concern, and, you know, just because it's a temptation for a company, and hopefully CCP has been burned enough on this particular subject that they're going to be smart enough not to do it, but to offer these Alpha Clones more ways to pay to get advantages. And then we will start creeping into that pay-to-win territory.
Yeah. I think that's something that everyone has on their mind, but I don't think that there's any way that CCP would do something like that without extremely pressing reason or, you know. They're not stupid. They remember Incarna. They remember Incarna with a, you know, they remember it as a lesson and their greatest mistake, I think.
That's good to hear. One thing I would like them to do is sort of follow the League of Legends model on skins, like come out with a new skin every month for, I mean, there's so many ships in the game. It doesn't even have to be like one skin for an entire line of ships. It could just be one skin for one ship. But just put it out there, hype it up, get people to spend money on it. It works
more than
League
that,
of Legends like a fucking charm.
Drop by down to like a third to a quarter of their current price. Like, they just need to. I really hope they do it before November, because you're gonna have a ton of people coming in with fresh eyes on the game. Like, oh, they've got skins in this game too. I played League or I played Hearthstone. I'll get a skin for my favorite ship. I'll drop a buck or two. Wait, it's $20 for a skin? What the flying fuck? Fuck this game. And yeah. Like that's like my immediate concern. My secondary concerns, like, where are my Serenity skins at? I want a shark thorax. Like, I want.
Yo.
I will pay money for a shark. I will pay current skin prices for a shark thorax. That's how much I want it.
Yeah, the prices things, they are a bit over. So for League skins, for instance, they range anywhere between $5 to $20. And the $20 ones are, like, really high-end. Like, you're talking unique animations, unique textures, unique voiceovers, all at the same time in one bundle. Whereas the $5 ones are, like, just a texture redo, which is basically what you're getting in Eve. So unless there's, like, the skin adds some sort of animated moving part to the ship, I think it should definitely be less than $10, just to match expectation in the market.
Yeah, I think it's something that they developed before microtransactions were quite as well understood within the industry. Because the point is, they're microtransactions, they're not actual transactions. They're the kind of thing that you pay about and you don't really think of, but enough people do it and you make a shitload of money.
Yeah, it's
a
volume thing.
Skin, you know, once, and oh, there's another skin I like. Oh, there's another skin I like. Oh no, I've spent $500 on this game.
Yeah, it's like talking to my friends who still play League of Legends, and they're like, "Yeah, you should play League. You should come back and play League. You know, it's free." And I'm like, "Yeah, but how much money have you spent on League of Legends?" I've spent $1,000 on League of Legends skins, and I'm like, "You have a problem."
I'm probably pretty close to that, to be
Oh my
honest. But you
god.
don't really feel it when you spread it over long periods of time.
Exactly.
You're the kind of, that's like, you could use that mentality with payday loans.
Sure. Use mentality on
Oh.
anything. Why aren't you using it on Eve skins? Get rich, CCP. Come on. I've been, even at current prices, I've been a ridiculous skin collector, but I've done it all with Ix, Isk, and Plex. I haven't, like, ever spent real money on it, but if they were cheaper, I probably would.
Yo, those purity skins though—that's what I want in my life.
Well, they
Yes.
get run into
CCP
those.
confirmed white supremacists.
Yeah, well, no, the Amar are confirmed white supremacists. CCP's just playing their character, fam.
All right, let's talk about the impact this is going to have on PvP. It's probably going to be a
Skins.
pretty substantial one, I think. So the limits of the clones are frigates, destroyers, cruisers, correct?
Tech 1 frigate destroyers and cruisers, and no pirate.
Yep,
And Tech
so
1
one
guns,
max.
Tech 1 everything.
Yeah, Tech 1 drones, I believe. Tech 1 emo. Yeah, pretty much everything Tech 1. I think some of the arms, some like tank mods are Tech 2, but.
Let the horde of griffins, mauluses, blackbirds, and celestis commence.
Yep.
Nice. Well, then you're gonna have hordes of not e-warships designed to kill those e-warships. Can
Well,
you
indeed.
imagine if your threat if your enemies are using like, let's say for example a Celestis fleet as their alpha support, and you tell all your new bros to get into Thoraxes and you go and absolutely destroy them.
One of the things we saw in the later stages of the Imperium, when they really had a ton of dudes, is that people kind of learned that if you can fill out more than one 256-man fleet, it's instead of doing three 256-man fleets of DPS ships, it's a lot stronger, depending on what you're facing, to do, okay, we'll have one 256-man fleet of DPS, and then we'll have a 100-man fleet of EWOR, and we'll have a 100-man fleet of a different fleet comp, like Harpies or something, as a support, and that gives your fleet a lot more versatility and power to achieve, in certain
Yeah,
circumstances.
it's combined arms comes to
Yeah.
Eve. And that is something that Providence does as well, but that's more because we're bad and don't have enough people who can get to DPS ships.
Yeah. I mean, for example, in PL when we did it versus ages ago when we were fighting Brave Newbies, when that was still happening, B and I would have their EWOR wing and their thing, and PL don't have the people to run a separate fleet. Like, we're all in our mains and subcaps, and then our alts are the supers, and then our alts again are the apostles and all that stuff. So, we have to shoot those things with our main ships, which means that the actual core opponent fleet isn't being shot as well.
I mean, it's definitely going to have to be something that gets addressed, because any of those new bros that integrate into an established alliance. I'm not talking about ones that are more oriented toward the alphas. I'm talking about like alphas that join goons or alphas that join waffles. They're going to have to be integrated in a way that makes them impactful. And if you're only limited to Tech 1, there's no doubt that electronic warfare is the thing. Like tackle, not as good. DPS, not even close. Logistics, not even close. They're going to have to go into an electronic warfare role.
I
So
mean,
you're going to see that
tackle's
as a much bigger
reasonable.
component in fleet fights.
Logistics is also surprisingly reasonable because you already use meta module, you already use meta reps just because of fitting requirements.
Yeah, T2 tank helps.
Yeah, T2
Although,
tank
okay.
does help, but.
To what extent can you get a T2 tank with Alpha Clones? Just not at all?
I believe you can use most of the armor modules because they're apart from hull upgrades 5. I think they get hull upgrades 4, right? Let me check. I will actually, I'm going to check out what you can get with
I
hull upgrades
wonder
4.
how T2 tank shield versus armor works on Alpha. CC probably thought of this and have made it even, but can you imagine if there was some kind of disparity between where you could like have T2 enams but not T2 adaptives because you can't get the tactical layering thingamabob?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's not the case, but
I would imagine they'll tweak it to make sure either you can use all Tech 2 tank mods or no Tech 2 tank mods.
well, I think you can get a T2 damage control and a T2 adaptive nanoplate, which is pretty good. Like you're gonna be down like 4 to, yeah, about 4k EHP, I reckon. and you have a lot more fitting, so it's really, really hard.
Yeah, I'm planning on starting an Alpha-only alliance in Northern Faction Warfare LoSiC, and we just do like old-school T1 Cruiser and Faction Warfare PvP all day, every day. It's going to be great.
Yeah, that is going to be great. I'd love to see the return of Tech-1 Cruiser roams.
I think Brilliant. We all would. Like, right now there's pretty much no reason to bring Tech-1 Cruisers.
Like Galmil got all full of themselves and started flying Absos and Hacks and stuff, and I left Waffles. Like, when I was, like, my main FCing days was when I was in Waffles, and it was T1 Cruisers and Battle Cruisers, like, all day long in LoSiC. Like, every day, multiple fights, because everybody could afford to throw them away. And now it's like, oh, you got to get in your Proteuses and your Legions, and everything's expensive, and you can't afford to whelp, so we've got to be super fucking risk-averse. Like, I miss the days of YOLOing around in T1 Cruisers so much.
And I miss the days of other people YOLOing around in T1 Cruisers, so I can go wreck them with my expensive shit.
You're what's wrong with the game, Ree?
Nah, man. The T1 Cruiser guys just get good and kill you anyway. I used Thoraxes with T1 Logi to kill a group of VNIs with Guardians once. It was great.
You see, those kind of fights where you just, like, completely out-FC and out-skill a group, they're so satisfying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I just can't wait to throw, like, cancer doctrines at these guys. It's gonna be fun.
You just wanna farm their tears.
Armor rooks. You don't have enough DPS to alpha them. Fuck you.
Fuck the new bros, Alec 2K16.
No, I'm actually going to do a... I'm helping a training alliance of my own. I'm going to talk about it later. But I'm going to be involved in teaching the new bros the good ways.
Mercenary
but
Academy?
I also plan on hazing them. That I plan on hazing all the new bros that are not joining my alliance. Let's put it like that.
Wow.
You've got to. They've got to have a real experience of the game. And the real experience is if somebody can shoot you, they're going to damn well shoot you.
That is very true.
Yep, no quarter asked, no quarter given.
Well, possibly
given. Tips given afterward to improve if they don't get on my nerves. Possibly. Not ruling it out.
Well, I mean, you generally get that anyway, unless you're fighting, like, a hardcore war, and if you lose a fight, people will generally be like, okay, here's what you did wrong. Because people want to train against good people.
But that's yeah, and I just think EVE culture has evolved that way. Even back when I was playing my first year, people were like that. If you gave a good fight, and you showed respect, even if you lost, people would, like, give you tips. One time a dude gave me a Tech 2 ship back when Tech 2 cartels were still running things. Because I gave him like one of the best fights he ever had. It was, I think, Vexer versus Brutix in the belt. And I was like baiting for pirates. So I was pretending to rat, but it actually had a full PvP fit. He landed on me, we brawled it out. It was like a 5-minute fight. It was amazing. And he finally managed to kill me. But afterward, he comboed me, and turns out he had been playing for like 3 or 4 years.
You'd be amazed.
And he was like, oh my god, I can't believe you did that. You know, you're such a young character. I thought I was going to kill you super easy. And it's like, yeah, well, this is the concept that I had. And I was kind of hoping for a good fight, so thanks for that. He said, yeah, man, no problem. Here, you like drones and stuff, right? He gives me a brand new, fully fit Ishker, which was like well beyond my ability to afford at the time. I was over the moon.
One of the best things about tanking, with what you said about the ratting, is alliance ticker tanking. Because, like, if you're in PL and you're ratting somewhere, everybody expects the Sino, but, like, if you're just genuinely ratting, it's great.
Do you want to know what's even better than a ticker tank? Ticker bait. Everyone sees CVA in local, and they think they're absolutely garbage solo pilots. Oh, I get so many easy fights. It's unbelievable.
That's not how you spell Volt.
Alright, yeah, but I'm not willing to drag myself down to that level.
At that point, it's not bait.
I'm gonna get fucking hazed on the forums now.
You were supposed to be our CSM member, now we know how you really feel. Gin for dumpster, 2K17.
Apothy for Gin's position, 2K6, 2K17.
Mate. I already gave it to Nash and Kyle, who says I can't take it back.
Probably vote Alec, hashtag GoRogue 2017.
Oh god, we're all fucking CSM Illumini. Yeah. Speaking of that, did we talk about the summit last episode? I don't think we did.
We have
because I
not.
Haven't heard.
It's on the docket. But I want to talk
about
a few more impacts on the free to play front, which came up. Stuff on recruitment and corp management. So we've already talked about integrating these guys into fleets. We've talked about training alliances. I think training alliances are going to become much more common. You guys already talked about doing an alpha-only alliance. I think that's a cool idea. But there are also going to be challenges to bring these guys in and just manage them in general. These guys are going to be new. They're going to be casual. They're not going to have incentive to be active very much. You're never really going to be able to tell if they've quit or if they're just alphas, you know. There's the whole alt-spy issue. How do you guys weigh in on this?
I mean, it's already a thing, you know, when Horde and Karma Fleet and all that stuff were created. That was really kind of the renaissance of new player organizations on a large scale. I think that people are just going to take what they learn from those organizations and then possibly start a few more, and then obviously Horde and Dreadnought, all those guys are going to get a ton more dudes in addition to that.
Pretty much. I think it's just going to reward alliances that already have existing infrastructure to take care of large amounts of players.
Yeah, if you're planning on starting your thing and setting it up on the day of the release, you're going to be way behind everyone else who's already going to have forums and comms and stuff ready.
Oh yeah, you definitely need to be doing that stuff now.
Yeah, undoubtedly. You need to, like, yeah, you need to really be thinking about it. The theory crafting obviously can wait until pretty much the day of launch, because a lot of it is known quantities, and we're waiting for CCP to finally nail down absolutely everything, because they did say in their post that skills could change, potentially, and, you know, that's something that could happen. But I think overall it's looking great. I just can't wait for it, in all honesty. I think it's a huge change to the game, and I don't think it's one that can realistically have bad implications for the game overall as long as it's handled well.
Well, the as long as it's handled well is sort of the part that's kind of up in the air. Like, will it actually be handled well? I think one pretty reasonable fear is that it's going to make spying unacceptably easy. Where at least before, if you wanted to get a spy into someone's alliance, you had to plex an account to have it clean with no API. Now you don't even have to do that.
Well, in that case, you just give alphas less access to your stuff. Or less access to your intel. You just don't tell, like, unless your alpha is actually, like, someone who needs to know about high-end stuff, like, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, then they shouldn't really need to know, in my opinion.
To what extent will you be able to tell if somebody is an alpha or not, is a question.
Yep, and I can also see if, you know, you have a alpha, entirely alpha organizations, or mostly alpha organizations, you know, you may want to promote these guys at some point. I don't think it's entirely reasonable to think that alphas are going to continually be low-level players. They may just be, you know, high-level, well-integrated players that just aren't paying because they don't feel the need to.
There'll be a new level of players, so just different players, and in that case you could vet them the same way you would vet anyone. You just gotta, do you trust them? If yes, then you can give them the information they need. If no, then don't give them the information they need. I don't think that that changes the spy meta at all. It just reduces the need to pay for them.
I mean, if you want a spy, then you can have an account you already plex, say your main account, and then just use one of the spare character slots and shove a spy in somewhere. It's already not difficult to get a spy in Horde or Tester or Evuni or whatever.
Yeah, well, anyone that does API checks would spot that immediately. To really get a spy into a solid organization, you need to have a fresh account.
The real question is, what are you going to do to make your alpha account worthwhile to a larger alliance like that, when you can't use things like freighters, you can't use jump freighters, you can use industrials, question mark? You can't really do a huge amount of stuff in terms of combat effectiveness. So
FC, Sinos.
If you want to try an FC from an alpha ship, I have
I
fucking
don't think you can
pity for you, my friends.
I've FC'd from an Algos many a time, and Algos is one of the things that they can fly, so I'm pretty sure it's doable.
Okay.
It can provide warp-ins on fleets easily. That's not, you don't need any skill points for that.
Yeah, but are you really gonna give the warping guy your logs? Like,
No, I'm talking like mid-fights, for instance. You could have your alpha drop fleet, join another fleet, act as warp on top of a Logi wing, that kind of thing.
yeah.
Could bump a super. Yeah, there are things that they could do.
Yeah, for sure, it'll be really cool. Who knows?
Infinitely recyclable could be potentially an issue.
At the end of the day, if you have one, I think I don't know. Like, at the end of the day, we just got to see how it shakes out, because give people enough time and we'll figure out the meta, and that meta will become well known.
Yep, true. The economy will definitely have an impact. Obviously, Tech 1
T1
goods are going to
consumption.
become much more lucrative to make than sell, excuse me, than they are now.
I actually don't know about that because you can just use your alpha accounts to make as much as you want with the same efficiency as regular accounts, because that you no longer have skills which reduce the mineral usage for T1 stuff. Sorry, I don't do much industry, but from what I understand, making T1 stuff with like a chain of 20 alpha accounts is the same as making it with one big Omega account. So that T1 production probably skyrocket in terms of actual ability, as well as the demand getting massively increased, because alphas can produce that what they can use, which I think is quite an interesting dynamic.
Well, that will assume that they'll. I mean, that might be true over time. I think short term, minimum, they're not going to have the sophistication to understand how all that's going to work, and like how to manage 20 alpha accounts to get what they need to get done.
No, but I mean, existing players might be able to use alpha accounts to just basically add to their existing production stuff for T1. But we don't know. Like, we'll have to see
Well,
about
even right
that.
there, that's gonna have more mineral demand, if nothing else.
Yeah, I would expect mineral prices to skyrocket.
I'm sure the alphas, some of them will probably, in return, try mining for money. I don't know if that's gonna be super viable with the ships they have available. Probably not, actually.
It's a venture, I believe.
Yeah. Which, well, that might not be the worst thing. Anyway, I think it'll have some interesting impacts, especially short term. I think you're gonna have some spiked prices. I actually think overall it's gonna be good for the game. Like meta and T1 stuff is always a bit undervalued. So having that demand there is gonna be cool. I don't think we're gonna have any shortages, to your point, Jin. I think people will definitely be able to increase their production to match. I just think prices are gonna go up. And I don't think they'll have any impact on politics at like a grand scale.
I don't know. There could be like if one Alpha Alliance gets big in the way that Brave
Brave
Newbies
Newbies
did,
did.
you could, like if you have like say I'm going to coin the term Brave Alphas happen, then that's going to be very interesting because that might have impacts on the overall meta, and that'd be cool. I mean, you have to realize that there has to be like a certain level of people for that to be possible, but if they double or triple the amount of people online, you can see it happening.
Yeah, true. Brave was sort of lightning in a bottle, though. It's difficult. I mean, I definitely don't think it's a certainty. Like, one of the things that we will see is a dedicated Alpha Alliance that gets enough power to like go out there and challenge 00 entities.
It was
I
a
don't think
dumpster
that's
fire
true.
that was amazingly fun to watch rage.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Post in the comments, guys. What do you think about Eve going free to play? Are you excited? Are you worried? Are you pumped? Are you getting any friends that are gonna come in and try it? I've already got two friends from work that are locked in to try it once it goes free. So that's exciting.
All of my league friends are finally trying Eve. Oh.
Oh, brilliant.
But they can't join my corp because my corp is quote unquote elite tier.
Send them my way. I'm looking for
I
dudes.
will. I will probably actually send them to Apophany's way.
Oh, fuck him.
You do know I'm in PL, right? Oh, wait, Dyson.
Fuck
yeah.
him.
Have you guys heard? Dyson is recruiting. They'll probably recruit alphas if you're good enough.
I know Dreddit's recruiting. Alright, let's go. CSM Summit Recap. Jin, you were there. What's the skinny?
Well, obviously, I can say very little until the actual meeting minutes come out, but I did put up a whole kind of overview of what happened. It was pretty fluffy because there's not super much I can say without breaking NDA, obviously.
Let's go with some general questions. Having been to the CSM summits, I think I have a rough idea of what you can say and what you can't. Let's talk about the sort of the pacing of it. How many days was the summit?
It was 4 days long, and there was all 14 here, there.
And so did you have, like, theme days, or was it fairly even about which topics you discussed at each
day? You
can
actually see the schedule on the Evo forums that was posted by LogiBro. But yeah,
please, nobody reads the Evo
up.
Forums, Jin.
I know,
the
I know.
Forest.
Let's not make our podcast audience go read something.
All right, let's see. Let me find it. But no, it was very interesting. We talked about quite a lot, and there was very, 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 very little downtime, we'll put it that way. The only real downtime we had was getting there on the Saturday and the meal that we had with CCP on the Thursday.
Let's talk about the tone of the summit overall. Each summit tends to have, you know, some sort of tone, whether things were tense or collaborative or... you know, there's sort of a general run through depending on how things are going in the game and what sort of challenges the CSM and CCP are facing together that can color a lot of the discussions. How would you describe the mood in the room for most of the summit?
I would describe it as constructive. Like, we didn't always agree with CCP on things, but we were very willing to sit there and say, okay, we understand the direction you want to go here, so let's talk about it, let's understand why you want to go in this direction. And from that, let's talk about how you might be able to better go forward with that. You know, it was very much a constructive criticism sort of feel. Except for, like, some of these were obviously a bit more player-led, like EVE metrics, where we were basically asking questions to find out if our assumptions were correct, and NullSec and Wormholes, which were both very, very player-led, you know, as in we had presentations and stuff to give to CCP and take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that CCP was very receptive to the feedback, or did you get a sense that things were sort of locked in and there wasn't really an opportunity for you to make change?
In the words of Hilmar, judge people not by their words, but by what they do. We'll see.
Very true, very true.
But, like, overall, I felt that they were listening to us, they were taking stuff on board, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of previous CSMs have said that they felt like they were being paid attention to whilst they're at the summit and then weren't in the future. But I have, obviously, high hopes that that will not be the case here.
I'm trying to think of what else I can ask you that you'll probably be able to answer.
Was there any, well, we worked together well in person, if that's something you're interested in. Like, we had a very dynamic mix of personalities. Aerith was a lot nicer in real life than he can come across as on the internet. And Zanira was definitely a lot more stable than even I expected.
I think he's turned out better than a lot of people expected. Certainly he's, he's been performing better than my own expectations. I'm very happy to be wrong on occasion. Major
nice.
Props to him for stepping up and, you know, filling the role. I don't think anyone really thought, at least no one I know, thought that he would be capable capable of it, that he just got put forward as a joke. And I'm really happy to see that he's proving everybody wrong. And, you know, it actually is, from what I've heard from everyone in the CSM, at least that I've been able to talk to, that he's like one of the better representatives that we have this year. Major props. Were there any, I don't know if you'll be able to answer this one or not, but were there any topics that went in a direction that you didn't expect them to go?
Yes. That's all I'm going to say. You'll see them in the minutes.
What's the timetable for the minutes release?
Hopefully next week, but we will see.
Alright, awesome. So, next show, assuming they get put out, we'll have a read-through of the minutes, and we'll ask Jin some more detailed questions. Highly encourage you guys, if you're able to look at the minutes yourselves, to send in questions that you want him to answer on air. And finally, guys, we've got the tournament bracket here. I don't know if you guys want to give some first-round predictions. Or at least we could talk about maybe favorite matchups. I know, obviously, Jin is very much looking forward to the CVA matchup. Pandemic Legion fighting, I think... I don't know if Iron there's Armada. Even a question that they're going to dominate Iron Armada.
I want to see if TNT can Mr. Magoo Lumpy. I want to know if that's going to happen.
Yo, it'd be crazy if they... There's a couple of matches that have really good upset potential like that.
There's also a couple of matches where I'm interested to see how these guys are able to function. Like Spectre Fleet comes to mind, White Legion comes to mind. You know, these are teams with a lot of question marks.
Exodus Myth could be good. Ronin RVB could be good. Spaceship Samurai Brave is a beautiful grudge match.
Castabout's Mercenary Coalition is going to be a good grudge match. That'll be very interesting to see. I know the MC has been putting in a lot of prep time on the tournament this year. Certainly more than any team that Noir has been involved with before, in terms of just hours in. So it'll be really interesting to see if all their hard work is paying off. And in terms of brackets, you know, I feel like they've got sort of like the CVA setup where if they do well, it's quite possible that they'll go pretty far before they hit a really tough team. But they do have some really tough teams in the later stages of that bracket.
If anyone makes it to the round of eight this year, then they are an absolute top tier team. Round of eight is going to be the real gatekeeping thing. I don't think you're going to be able to luck your way into the round of eight.
Nah, no way. You're 100% right on that one. There's just too many teams in, like, knockout positions to get to eight. Like, that are either former champions or former finalists, or at least those caliber teams that you always expect to do well every year. They're fairly evenly distributed. So excited this year. It's going to be great.
Oh, it's going to be great to watch. And they've got a good commentary team, so... yeah.
Alright, host highlights. I've got two this year. This episode. For this year's EVE Vegas, Noir has secured a very, very sweet pad. No more Planet Hollywood rooms. The Planet Hollywood fucking sucks. If you've gone to EVE Vegas, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The rooms are shite. And we're not putting up with it anymore. So, we went to Airbnb, and we got ourselves, like, an actual house for the weekend. It's got a pool. It's got a kitchen. It's got televisions. It's going to be amazing. So we are, like, I don't know if we're going to be, like, the headquarters for the parties, but it'll be at least headquarters for the Noir/Mercenary Coalition party, because it's just going to be an awesome staging base. It's, yes... not right on the strip, so you have to take a lift there, but you don't really go back and forth that much. in Vegas. You'll go like to the strip, you'll hang out, you'll go back to the rooms and hang out, and that's pretty much it. So it just made sense for us to get like a really, really cool set of rooms. And it wound up being much cheaper than going and doing hotels. I think for like the whole weekend, we basically got what it would cost for maybe one or two nights. So, super decent, great looking place. Gonna be a lot of fun. My other highlight is I have taken the plunge, guys. I have started a new corporation. I have decided that I'm gonna be spending more time in Eve in the coming weeks and months. And I've really enjoyed my time in Evolution and NC DOT. It was great to see how a large alliance functioned like that, because I'd never been in one before. And I really want to give a special thank you to Sir Molly and everyone in Evol that made me feel really welcome. But it just was awkward in my time zone. There was like no other people to fly with in the corp, and there was infrequently people to fly with in NC DOT. And I didn't feel like I had a sense of direction there, which I don't know if that was due to the Alliance tournament or just because things were so large or because your people were burnt out from World War B. But I just needed, I'm very goal-oriented with my Eve play. I need something to work toward. So, I've started a new corp. I'm moving down to Providence area. I'm going to be spending a lot more time with Jin and Co.
Oh, I didn't know that you were coming with us, Matt. That's
Oh,
awesome.
yeah, buddy.
The real question is, are you going to be shooting us or helping us?
Hopefully a little bit of both, but probably mostly the shooting, because CVA tends to prefer it when I shoot them as opposed to when I help them. But I'm also going to be working with NOR Academy, and we're going to be doing stuff for training alliances and prepping for alphas and all that stuff. I don't know if they're 100% going to be in the Providence area along with me, or if I'm just going to part-time with them. I don't think that's been decided, but I am going to be more involved there. I've got an account ready to go either way. And for the Pravi area, I'm gonna look to bring a little trade to the Providence area, bring a little capitalism into Providence, and that is why I've created the Capitalist Army. And I encourage everyone listening to the sound of my voice to spread it around like wildfire that the Capitalist Army is in effect and in the house. And I encourage anyone listening to this that is interested in doing some sort of trade hubby type thing in the Pravi area, or just wants to go down in PvP in Providence anyway, and wants to do it under the Declarations of War banner, wants to learn FCing from me, anything like that. Come on down. I'm throwing it open to all Declarations of War listeners. Let's do this thing. And yeah, let's have fun. So if anyone wants more information, you can email me. And yeah, let's make this happen, guys. Jin?
That's awesome. My shout out is to Nash and a couple of other people like Bay who helped to organize Eventee this year. It was absolutely wonderful. Couldn't have asked for a better couple of days of fun, and I look forward to spending some more time with them next weekend.
A party?
I would like to pimp out my Alliance tournament party. On the 16th of October, I've hired out the Bristol Pear in Birmingham, and we've got a projector screen is in a really nice pub, and we're all going to watch the Alliance tournament together and get drunk. It's going to be
I'm
fantastic.
gonna be there, and I'm gonna try not to get as drunk as I did at EVNT because I need to go home.
It's going to be a really awesome day, just chilling out with nerds, like a normal Eve meet, but with Alliance tournament going on as well.
That'll be great. Now we've got the region descriptions here. Go click that link, you guys. And let's have Jin, why don't you do domain?
Yes.
And let's have Apothne read Esoteria, and I will do Essence.
All right.
Whenever you're ready, Jin.
Gonna go for a solid bombastic Amarian voice here.
Oh yeah. You got a he's an emperor, for God's sakes.
In God's name, the Amar have reclaimed the entirety of our world. Now, blessed with the divine mandate of God, we spread our reach unto other worlds. From nearby Hydon to the distant Mesaba, to the burning southern star of Penelan, and all lands in between. They are our birthright, our duty, our domain. Emperor Hedoran III. 21,290 AD, upon the opening of the first Stargate since the collapse.
That's quite nice. I think the residents of Hedion are going to be furious you mispronounced their system.
I get shit on TBH.
I'm going to do a very awful David Attenborough impression. I didn't know this was a thing, but apparently we're doing it now. When Sentience Nation was at the height of its power, Esoteria was one of the richest territories. Scholars, philosophers, scientists, and many of its most affluent true citizens made it their home. The occupants relied on the remoteness of the region to keep them safe, anticipating that the legions of true slaves in Stain would remain an impenetrable shield that none could pass. When the Alliance of Empires swept down upon the nation, the shield was shattered and their foes crushed under the Alliance's unassailable might. Then, like barbarians of old, the forces of the Amar Empire crashed into Esoteria, pillaging and slaughtering all before them. Now, all that remains of the nation's once pervasive presence in the area is floating husks, great ruins that stand as both a eulogy to Sancha's former dream and a stark warning to any who might provide the ire of all four empires. The nation continues to send their own ships into the area, scouring it for any bit of lost technology that might give them an edge in their attempt to resurrect Sancha's dream.
Oh, brilliant. I think I'm going to go for a Christopher Walken.
We don't have 2 hours.
The Federation is not a defined region of space, of planets, of mountains, rivers, or woods. It is a vision. Essence. Yabra.
I'm surprised that quote doesn't have an attribution.
How come I got a really long-ass one? Like, what's the deal, guys?
We wanted to hear as much of your voice as possible.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
if you want to do
gotta
that,
get that,
you should turn into my stream in, like, 2 hours for Eve Nerds Play D&D.
I gotta pump you for all your guest juices.
Guest juices.
Ugh, I don't know what you're suggesting there, Alec, but I like it.
And finally, we do have a spot for advertising on declarations of war. If your site, service, or corporation would like to advertise on this podcast, just shoot me an email.
Just plug me every week. You'll be great.
All right, guys, that's it. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll. Leave a comment. Good hunting, listeners.
Must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.